You're listening to the Radio Cafe, coming to you from the Santa Fe, New Mexican, and radiocafe.org, where you can contact us at any time. I'm your host, Mary Charlotte Domondi. Support for the Radio Cafe comes from the Lannan Foundation, presenting a reading and conversation by Deborah Levy with Jonathan Freeman on Wednesday, October 30th at 7 o'clock at the Lensic. Deborah Levy is a fellow of the Royal Society of Literature and writes fiction, plays, and poetry. The author of beloved books including Hot Milk and Swimming Home, both Man Booker Prize finalists, and Things I Don't Want to Know, her latest novel is The Man Who Saw Everything, longlisted for the 2019 Booker Prize. Tickets available at the Lensic, 988-1234, or lensic.org. I'd like now to welcome back to the Radio Cafe Armando Espinosa Prieto and Craig Johnson. They are with the Metamorphosis Documentation Project. Welcome, gentlemen.
Thank you, Mary Charlotte.
Nice being here again.
Yeah, nice to see you again. I mean, you guys are the Metamorphosis Documentation Project, and you have produced a film called Noche de Animas, which is going to be screening at the Museum of International Folk Art at 2 o'clock on Wednesday afternoon, the 23rd of October. Now, this is an organization that you guys started some years ago to document some indigenous parts of Latin America where there are traditions that are alive and well but may not always be with us. So it's very much, as you say, a documentation project. Let's talk about this particular film, the documentary Noche de Animas. What's it about?
Noche de Animas sin Sunsan, which is the full title of the film, is about the celebrations of Day of the Dead in Sinsunsan, Michoacán. Sinsunsan is one of the best well-known celebrations of Day of the Dead, and a lot of people go and see it, but most people don't really know what it's about except for the public displays of marigolds and tombs.
And it's a Purépecha community, Mestizo itself, but the whole municipality has several smaller communities that are still very much Purépecha with that as their first language. The film basically is having the people of the community doing most of the talking and telling what this whole ceremony, celebration, ritual means to them on a personal basis and as a community.
Yeah, it's such an interesting place that we see in the movie. I mean, it's very indigenous, but also Spanish, very, you know, mestizo, as they say. And they have these traditions that are also kind of a hybrid. In other words, there's a very much of an indigenous philosophy and way of thinking and perceiving the world behind it. But also the Virgin of Guadalupe is there and the churches and things like that.
Especially with Day of the Dead celebrations, there was a fusion between the traditions of Mesoamerica and what the Spanish brought. So, like you say, there is conceptually it's very indigenous. And at the same time, those indigenous concerns about death and about the destiny of the souls have these Spanish Catholic overtones. But when you look at it closely, it's very indigenous. It just looks Catholic.
Yeah, I mean, this is what's interesting to me. I mean, I remember once talking to somebody in Cuba who was talking about the kind of hybrid religion there, which is Catholic and West African at the same time. And I said, how much of it is Catholic and how much of it is West African? And she said, there is a thin veneer of Catholicism over a whole huge, you know, the rest of it is, it's really profoundly African. And I wondered if it was the same kind of thing here.
Well, actually, no, because from, you know, everything we have read, there is two different kind of syncretisms, of syncretic acculturization. One type, it's like in Cuba, where the gods of African religion take on the persona of Christian saints, but they're still the African gods.
Right.
This type of syncretism that happened in Mexico is where the two cultures mixed and created something new. And, you know, you can explain it simply by saying, oh, it's mostly indigenous with a little bit of Catholicism, but it's not. It's just the indigenous understanding of what they learn in the Christianization process.
In this community, this is the third documentary that we've done of Day of the Dead in different indigenous communities in Latin America, another one in Mexico and one in Bolivia, in a Zapotec community and a Quechua community. And in this one, the Christian element is more pronounced than in the other two, the Catholic element, and there's more overt attention paid to that part of the soul and of the Catholic teachings. But underneath it and mixed in with it, there is a huge indigenous component to it. And some things that they firmly believe and practice that are not accepted in the Catholic religion as being part of the Catholic religion. And yet there is a melding. The churches, the formal church is involved, the priest is involved, and yet it's in many ways more indigenous than Catholic.
What are the parts that are really indigenous? In other words, one of the things that, I mean, when you watch the film, you see it starts with the rituals that take place when a child dies and what the child's godparents do, and they celebrate kind of marching down the street in a way that is almost like a wedding, and they do these, they shoot off sort of little firecrackers and bottle rockets to alert the soul of the young person that they're going to the graveyard so the kid, you know, so the soul doesn't get lost. Those are very interesting. And then there's a whole Day of the Dead, which is almost like a Week of the Dead set of rituals, because people can take a week, which is wonderful. But, I mean, break it down for us. What's the indigenous part? What's the Catholic part, especially where the beliefs are concerned?
Well, let me try to explain quickly how this came about. The Mesoamerican religion was also always concerned with the dead, with the destiny of the dead. And there were celebrations done to the dead in pre-Hispanic times. There were celebrations done for children that died. And it was called, the Spanish called it, the little feast of the muertecitos, the children that died. And then the month later, it would be for the adults that died. And that was July and August. I mean, it was the 9th and 10th lunar month. So the Spanish came, and the Spanish bring this whole new religion, and they had been celebrating the dead also, but the Spanish had also mixed different pagan and Christian cultures to create this celebration for the dead. And it came first with the martyrs, and then with the saints, and then somewhere along the line they decided that the people that died in the grace of God should be remembered and treated specially. So they did the Fieles Difuntos, the All Souls Day. But also that was celebrated 8 days after Pentecost at the beginning. And then when they Christianized the Gallic provinces, and the Gallics celebrated the Gallic Day of the Dead, of the ceremony of Samhain, it was celebrated at the harvest. So that was influential in the Catholic Church to change the date. So when it mixes with the pre-Columbian stuff, it's really not a mix of Catholicism and pre-Columbian religion. It's really a mix of many different influences. The Romans celebrated Parentalia, that influenced the way that the Feast of the Martyrs and the Saints happen within Christianity. And if you see in Parentalia, the Romans used to bring offerings to the graves, food, and did a party, the same way that the pre-Columbian people did, just because that's what you do for the dead.
Well, it is interesting, and this film sort of made me think about that question of how incredibly universal indigenous practices are all around the world. I mean, you can go to Siberia, you can go to the tropics, you can go to Cuba, you can go to North America and South Africa, and there are these common threads, which is respect for and ritualizing of people who have died.
Especially in pre-Columbian America, even the myths attributed part of the creation myth to the dead, like one of the Aztec creation myths, Quetzalcoatl, goes to the underworld and retrieves the bones of the dead from a past era and bleeds on them and creates mankind for this world we will live in now. So there is this concern about taking care of the soul of the dead and paying the dues for creating mankind. And all over you find people relating their well-being to the well-being of the dead.
Right.
So if you don't treat the dead right, something is going to go wrong.
Because in there, that's one of the beliefs, more so than in the Catholic, where the dead are in heaven and you can maybe intercede for you in some sense. But here, it's a closer relationship that they feel they have with the dead, to the point where their belief is that the souls of the dead, and not just the recently dead that year, but come back each year and are there visiting with them for 24 hours. So they're really preparing the whole ritual for that party that they're going to have with their dead family members and when they're once again reunited.
One of the ways that they respect their dead and interact with their dead, I mean, first of all, there's the whole set of offerings, which is food and flowers and incense and candles and things that a lot of preparation and a lot of farming go into. And then when they get there, when it happens, when the whole thing is happening, it's in the graveyard. There are children playing in the graveyard. There are people sleeping in the graveyard all night long. And I mean, they're not shying away from that interaction. And I found myself also wondering, what is it like for them? Like, do they hear the voices of their departed, you know, relatives, whatever?
No, whenever you ask, they say, we can't see them, but we feel them.
Yeah.
You know, and that's also a very pre-Hispanic way of understanding the world. What I was going to say, and it was answering your question when you asked what is Christian and what is pre-Columbian. Well, the whole basis of the ceremony is pre-Columbian. The dead come back. And it's not the dead that are in heaven or in purgatory. It's all the dead. So what happened to eternal damnation?
It's not there.
It doesn't make sense.
It's not there in the indigenous.
It doesn't make sense through the Christian way of looking,
right,
or the Catholic way of looking at death and what happens after death. Everywhere we've worked and we ask that question, are they really here? Some people are very concerned. Some people test it, and they have bad luck for not believing. So in our other movie from Oaxaca, a whole big story that the guy makes is about a guy that didn't believe and what happened to him for not believing. But it's that they feel it. They know that the family member, it's a party because the family is united for that day, and then they have to wait till the next day. Also, some people have told me somewhere else, not in Sinsunsan, in Oaxaca, the dead are always with us. It's that day we throw them a party.
And one thing in particular that's definitely indigenous here and is distinct to an extent from other places that we've worked in this Purépecha culture is that when they believe when someone dies during the year, their soul, whether it's a child or an adult, stays at the family home until the first day of the dead. So they're there for however many months it is from when they died until the first time of they have the Day of the Dead, which is when then they go to the other world and will just come back once a year for
because
that day.
Because they say the portal to that other world where the dead are, that it's parallel to our world, that portal doesn't open till that day. So they can't go back and forth. Only on that day they can go back.
How far back does it go? In other words, people have lost sometimes children, parents, grandparents, great-grandparents. How far back does it go that they identify these people?
Well, there's one quote that Armando always repeats, which with good reason. There was a Purépecha woman when we were first working on developing this project. And we said something about Day of the Dead because it's the common term. And she said, it's Noche de Animas, Night of the Souls. They aren't dead until they're forgotten.
Right.
So that as long as there's someone in the family that remembers that person or that soul from when they were alive, they're still honored, they're still coming to visit. Once you get a couple generations away where it's only by name that someone knows who that great-grandfather was or that great-grandmother, then they're basically forgotten.
In Oaxaca, the ancient Zapotec believed that the bones lost power. And they lost power because there was nobody there to remember them. So in the mausoleums, I mean, most of the things that have been studied are the big mausoleums of the royalty or the ruling class. So it's very hard to find out for real how the poor people did it. But they would have that person and those bones would be there with the other bones. And as there were nobody to remember, those bones had lost their power and they were pushed aside. They were left there, but they were pushed aside because nobody remembered them anymore.
Right. Which makes sense because you have to clear the way at some point. Otherwise, reciting the names of the dead could take you... half a day.
But, you know, also there are parts of Mexico, and this comes from other pre-Columbian rituals that were done to the dead, where the dead are celebrated according to how they died. And so Day of the Dead is not only the first and the second. In some places, the third, they celebrate people that died from car accidents. Or on the 30th, they celebrate people that are forgotten, that nobody makes offerings to. So all those different celebrations tie in to this left no dead behind.
The point that you made, Armando, that this is a real combination of different indigenous traditions because the European contains all sorts of indigenous background, which sometimes Christian, Catholic, whatever people aren't totally cognizant of, but our solstice rituals and our, you know, autumn and spring rituals, Easter and things like that are very much part of that. And I was wondering if there was a relationship between the celebration in Mexico that you're talking about in this part of Michoacán and our Halloween.
Oh, there is, because Samhain, that ritual that I mentioned in the Celtic provinces, was, you know, you always hear, oh, Halloween, the souls are loose, they come back, you make off. So there is that there. And actually, to me, it's very interesting because that was a ritual and a celebration that was pretty much spiritual, that afterwards got Christianized and then became part of pop culture and lost all the spirituality. I mean, nobody thinks of Halloween as a spiritual ritual.
It basically went in that quote-unquote pagan environment of being All Hallows Eve and being a ritual for the dead to becoming All Souls Day and All Saints Day in the Catholic Church and Halloween, this secular public
party. And as a matter of fact, it's something that is happening to Day of the Dead. If you go to any Day of the Dead celebration here in the States, everybody has painted faces and partying, and it's a secular celebration. If you go to the villages, there is nobody with painted faces. Everything is about family. Everything is about the compadres, you know, the spiritual kin family. It's about the godchildren and the relation to the dead through the family, you know. So, for example, in Oaxaca, you only visit the houses where you have that kind of relation. You visit your family, you visit your compadres, the children visit their godparents, but you don't go to any house if you don't have that kind of relations. So it's a agricultural ritual that celebrates family relations and shares with the dead family.
Talk about the civilization from which these people are descended. Purépecha is the name of this sort of language group, but it's also descended from a civilization that I hadn't heard much about. Tell us about them.
There is many many different theories of where the Purépechas came from, and the Purépechas,
there was an empire,
and they were at the same time as the Aztecs. The Purépecha empire was the only group that the Aztecs didn't conquer, couldn't conquer.
Large group.
I've read that the Purépechas were the only people that patrolled their borders.
And that empire included what today is all of Michoacán and parts of all the seven surrounding states. It was a quite large empire and relatively close to the center of the Aztec Empire. But
and Tzintzuntzan was the capital of that empire. So, you know, the archaeological places in Tzintzuntzan are amazing. There is many theories of where the Purépechas came from. Some people say that it was part of the Aztec migration that came to Mexico and became the Aztecs, and that they were part of that and they stayed behind and they kept on going. But the language is totally different. So there is even a theory, because of the language and the pottery, that they came from the Andes through the ocean.
There's similarities in the language, in the type of pottery that was done, and also in the ancient burial methods of what the tombs were like, more to the Andes than there are to other parts of Mexico.
But those are just theories.
Right. You
know, they haven't put the finger on it.
You're listening to The Radio Cafe. We'll be back in just a half a minute. Please stay with us. The Los Alamos National Laboratory Foundation is once again accepting scholarship applications, and Northern New Mexico residents are invited to apply. Deadline for undergraduate scholarships is the 21st of January, 2020. Deadline for career pathways scholarships in support of two-year degrees, certificates, and trades is November 17th, 2019. Criteria and application for both may be found at lanlfoundation.org/scholarships. Now, these people now are quite poor, and there's a sort of poignant moment where a woman says, "We used to be very, very poor. Now we're poor." You know. But I wondered, what is the basis of their economy? What do they do the other, you know, 360 days of the year?
Well, most of the people in Tzintzuntzan are potters and craftsmen. There's quite a few crafts, but mainly pottery and also tourism.
And the pottery and the tourism presumably go together.
Well, yes. And Day of the Dead goes together with tourism because it's one of the major attractions for people to come and watch.
But aside from the other dead, there's a year-round tourism because of the religious complex there. Tzintzuntzan was the head of the empire. When the Spanish came and conquered it, they built a large religious complex, as they usually would when they're taking over that central place. And it's a pilgrimage place, so that there are a lot of Mexicans from other parts of Mexico and Mexico City that come on a very regular basis to come to the religious complex, pay homage to the Virgin de la Soledad.
Now, I have to ask you, how did you two, basically Santa Feans, start doing this work? You've been at it for so long. I mean, I can't remember the first time you were on this show, but it was a long time ago.
Well, what happened was I started making art videos, and I have an interest on mestizaje and mixed cultures. And
what's your own background?
Well, I'm Cuban, and I grew up in Puerto Rico, and I've, you know, this is my third home. So when I started making those videos, we started going to Copper Canyon, to the Rarámuri, to the Tarahumara Sierra, and gathering materials for those videos, and quickly realized that it wasn't the right way of going into indigenous communities and gather stuff, maybe pay a couple of dollars to be allowed to film and contribute to the fiesta, but then never come back, you know, and it felt wrong.
Yeah.
And we decided to start making more formal documentations so we could have a product that we could give back to those communities. So that's when we started working with community museums, because we would have a recipient for that work that could benefit from it. So now what we do is that we document in conjunction with the museum, and then we give them the rights to reproduce and sell in the museum to benefit the museum. And then we show the movie like we're doing here to try to raise consciousness that all cultures are important, that diversity is what makes us great, and also to have a way of creating sort of a umbilical cord to the Mexican community here so they can keep touch with their culture.
Has that happened? Are you making direct contact with the Mexican community here in New Mexico?
Not just in New Mexico, but this one in particular was an interesting one because there's a large expatriate community of Sinsunseños from Sinsunsan up in Tacoma, Washington, of all places. Turns out like 30 years or so ago, a guy went up there to work on one of the, I don't know if it was apples or tomatoes or some farm, and then they needed more help, so people kept on coming, and it's turned into a large community, and they're very tight-knit still. They celebrate a lot of the same traditions and organizations. So with the help of the Mexican consulate here and the Mexican consulate in Seattle, we went up there to present the movie to them.
What was that like?
It was great.
It was amazing. We stayed with a person from the community that we knew her family, and she knew a lot of the family members that their family members come out in the movie. So I said, could you call them all and tell them to come, you know? So there was the first person that comes in the movie that talks in the movie and talks in Purépecha, because we always try to include the language. We think it's important that people realize this have their own language. It's not a dialect. It's a full-fledged language. So the first person that speaks had died. A man, he was a teacher in town. He died in his 50s. And his daughter was living there, and she's undocumented.
Yes.
Undocumented, so she hadn't seen him for 8 years. She hadn't been able to go when he died. He wasn't able to go on the first day of the death, that it's as important as going to the burial. And she came to the movie, and she started crying. She controlled herself, then his voice came back out, and the rest of the movie, she was sobbing all through the movie, and then she came and thanked us. And you think your work really doesn't affect people, but it does, and it may be in small scale, but it creates like a wave, you know, it becomes bigger and bigger, and people were coming to us after that showing and thanking us. I can tell you, the majority of the people that follow us in Facebook, that follows Metamorfosi in Facebook, are people from the places where we have worked.
And another thing that happened up there that wasn't as dramatic as that, but was also impressive, we had two showings at a Mexican consulate in Seattle, one night in English and one night in Spanish. And the people that came on both evenings were almost exclusively Spanish speakers, at least that was their primary language. And it was parents, usually mothers, mostly, who were bringing their kids anywhere from 7, 8 to 14, 15, 16 to the movie because they wanted them to see what the whole ceremony was about and to experience that part of the culture.
And what was it like for the kids?
The kids didn't react a lot. They reacted. I was watching them as they were watching. They were very into it. But as far as talking afterwards, because we always have a Q&A afterwards, and it was really the adults that did most of the talking afterwards. They loved it. But the kids also, just their expressions while it was going on was great. And we also there did another showing at the Museum of Industry and History.
Industry and History in Seattle.
And that they were doing a Day of the Dead celebration there, and they had invited three elementary schools were bringing classes for the day.
They were bilingual schools.
Bilingual schools. So we did a showing there, and it was almost exclusively those kids who were elementary age. And we thought it was going to be really a hard sell just because, you know, it's a documentary. And those kids loved it. They were vocal during the movie, but not in an inappropriate way.
Yeah.
They were discussing it back and forth.
Now, in this community in Mexico, is their way of life under threat? Is it somehow kept in place from this tourism? Are young people leaving the community? Are young people learning the language? I mean, what's the sense of sort of where the community's going?
No, in Sinsunsan, the main town that it's the head of the municipality, the majority of the people don't speak the language.
Don't speak the native
the
language.
The Purépecha language. It's the villages that form part of the municipality that are very traditional indigenous villages, and they are what keeps that indigenous sense alive in that municipality. It's complicated because in the 1970s, the Mexican government, the federal government, joined the state of Michoacán, the state of Oaxaca, the state of Mexico, to make Day of the Dead a tourist attraction. So that started changing the form in which it's celebrated. For example, in the movie, you hear that they say, before we used to do it in the daytime, not at night. But at 4 in the morning, there's no tourist that is going to come. So they started doing it in the afternoon, going to the cemetery. And then they stay longer because they have to do their own thing also.
Right.
And they want to please the tourists because it's a big industry.
So the real thing happens after the tourists go to bed?
It goes both ways. Because yeah. Part of it is in the house before they go to the cemetery. And then even though the tourists might be there, it's still real for them at that time of the night. And through the night they stay in. And as the night wears on, you see more of what you were talking about earlier, where there's a real like communion around each grave, where the family is there as a unit, where the kids are helping out with the different parts of it and then falling asleep. And it goes till the morning. And in the morning, they have an interchange between family members of whatever offerings they were brought to their grave. They will, with the people next door to them, they'll change some of the fruits in that back and forth to take home.
Yeah, that's what I was wondering, because you make these offerings, but the food doesn't really go to waste.
No, they say that they lose its flavor, because the dead take the flavor, but they share it. It's sharing the harvest with the living and with the dead. There is three stages to the ritual, the preparations. They start in June when they plant the marigolds, you know, and then they go on till the Day of the Dead. And then it's the communion with the dead around the altar at the home. And then it's the communion with the dead and the community in the cemetery. So it's a world-making, David Carrasco explains it like that, world-making, a world-centering, and world-renewing. And that's what makes it such a powerful ritual.
With the tourism in this particular community, there's been accommodations made, definitely, as we mentioned, and there's also been changes made to safeguard the ritual aspect of it. Unfortunately, some of the tourists that come are there just for the party. So they're far away from the cemetery, up by in the parking lot of the National Monument Ruins. They do a bandstand and they have a party up there for those people who are coming just to party, so they aren't bothering and interrupting everything that's happening in the cemetery.
Some years back, people would be drunk stumbling over graves, and they're trying to separate that so people can have their time with their dead.
And that's been quite successful. It's still a huge amount of tourism that comes from it, but that separation has helped a lot.
We tried to avoid the tourism factor within the documentary.
Yeah, it doesn't show at all. And, you know, you do, as you guys are talking, one does wonder how it'd be like if one of my parents' memorial service, a whole bunch of people came
to what?
To look. It must be a little tricky.
It is. And we actually asked the presidencia, the local government, to give us guards to go with us. And my main concern was that we're filming at night and, you know, the cameras are set up for very low light and some people start throwing flashes and it gets ruined. So we had guards going with us, stopping the people from taking flashes and also keeping some of the tourism away because I didn't want it to be a tourist propaganda film, you know.
So the film is called Noche de Animas Tsintzuntzan, and it's screening at the Museum of International Folk Art here in Santa Fe at 2 o'clock on Wednesday, October 23rd. It's a production of the Metamorphosis Documentation Project, Armando Espinosa Prieto and Craig Johnson. What are you guys doing next? Do you have another project in mind?
Well, let me fill you in on one thing we did with this project that we're expanding in the next project, and is we did a workshop, a filming and editing workshop with the community that was very cool, and they made three small 3-minute films. So now we're trying to expand that. from that project, now one of the people that participated in the project, not all of them have followed through on doing that work, but there is one guy that is now working with the university in Mexico, with UNAM, and he's making short videos to teach Purépecha-speaking people to speak better Purépecha. That came out of our workshop. So now we're going back to Oaxaca, and there is a ceremony in Teotitlán del Valle where we've worked before. It's called Gul, and Gul means ancestor or old man, and it's a ceremony. It's a ritual, a political, social ceremony, where there is five barrios, and the five barrios one day a week have this. People that dress up as old men and their wives, and they come into the municipal authorities building, and in a funny way, they tell the president what he's doing wrong, what he's doing right, what he isn't doing, and he has to take it. You know, and
sounds a little like the Fiesta melodrama.
but this is for real, and this is like an indigenous socialist government. There are no political parties. And as everyone, like that municipal president, is elected for a 3-year term by a popular vote on a municipal assembly where everybody in town comes and decides who. So it's taken, that part of it is taken very seriously.
Yeah.
And within each neighborhood, when they choose who those two old men are going to be, there's discussion about what they're going to be telling the municipal president that he isn't doing or should be doing. So that part is serious.
Very interesting.
Because it's the interest of each one of the barrios. So everybody has different interests. And then afterwards, they go into the main plaza of the town and they exchange presents with the authorities, and then they dance with the authorities. And there is, everybody in town is in costumes dancing. It's amazing.
Each evening at the end of all that is a big party in the plaza with everyone from town that wants to coming, and a lot of them in costume. A lot of it is cross-dressing.
So what we're planning to do is a workshop, a filming workshop to people from the community, and then those people are going to be part of the crew filming with us, with the idea that maybe some of them would like to keep on adding to the audiovisual.
Well, that's what I was going to say. I think it's really important that they start documenting themselves. Once you give them the tools to do that,
right,
you can step back and let them, you know, and then see what their perspective is and how they do it differently. I was once talking to a friend who was talking, I think, about they gave cameras to people in Bolivia, and as they were showing them how to use them, they showed them some portraits of people, just a single person, and they were like, what's that? Like, why would you ever take a picture of one person? It doesn't make sense. You know, they couldn't think as individuals. So these are things that we would never think of, being Westerners and portraiture being so natural to us.
And actually, part of what we want to do is integrate those people that are going to work with us in the decision making, precisely to have more influence from their point of view, and not all being our point of view that might be educated, but it's still.
You might think you're more objective than you are. You might be bringing a cultural bias.
And right. In our last two projects, we've had this program on a smaller scale, and ramping it up each time, so this will be something at a much larger scale. But we've had young people in the community who have participated in the filming, and they have brought some different aspects to it. They've also educated us on things that involved in the whole process and the whole ritual. And as Armando was saying, this time we want them to be even much more involved, where they'll be they'll be on the directly involved in the creative aspect of it and the decision making on just how the whole thing.
And another thing is, we're creating a board of advisors, elderly people in the community, to advise us on how to get it right.
Craig Johnson and Armando Espinosa Prieto, I want to thank you for being with us, and also mention that the Metamorphosis Documentation Project won the Otley Award, which is given by the Mexican government, and it's the highest honor bestowed by that government to people or organizations working outside of Mexico. So this is a great honor. Congrats to both of you.
Thank you. Thank you. We were very appreciative of it.
And thanks for being with us, and we will see you at the Museum of International Folk Art Wednesday, October 23rd at 2 o'clock.
Thank you very much, Mary Charlotte. It's a pleasure.
Radio Cafe would like to thank its sponsors, the Lanel Foundation, the Lannan Foundation, the Lenzik Center for Performing Arts, Southwest Care Center, and the Santa Fe Institute. Los Alamos National Laboratory Foundation moves public education in bold new directions through grants, programs, and advocacy. Supporting social and emotional needs of students and teachers, visit lanelfoundation.org for more information. And many thanks to the Lanel Foundation for supporting the Radio Cafe. You've been listening to the Radio Cafe. I'm your host, Mary Charlotte Domondi. This program is produced in collaboration with the Santa Fe New Mexican, an independent newspaper since 1849. The New Mexican is on the web at santafenewmexican.com, where you can find out about our community and you can subscribe to the digital and paper editions. You can also find previous episodes of the Radio Cafe on the web at radiocafe.org. And if you want to send us any feedback on the show, ideas, or comments, please write an email to feedback@radiocafe.org. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.